Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with my co-host, Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, getting excited about the weekend. My lovely wife gets back in town tonight, and we're taking the next couple of weeks off. We're going to do the Christmas thing in Pensacola, then we're headed to Key West, Florida for New Year's, so I'm getting jazzed, but I'm leaving all the hard work to you.
I see that. It's not easy being the 1%, is it, Stone?
No, it's not.
So we got a big show today.
Hey, we have a studio full of folks today. A little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from a return guest, Mr. Dickerson from the Dickerson Law Group, and I think maybe he's brought a guest with him. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce two gentlemen from the CPA firm Clayton Paulk Associates, Mr. Bruce Paulk and Gary Clayton. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, if you will, about your firm and what you're out there trying to do for folks.
We've been around in Atlanta for about 40, 50 years.
No way. You're not old enough to have been there.
No, I'm not, but we've still been here.
My dad started the firm in 1953.
Yeah. Wow. How about that?
He's still around and still active in it, and we use his wisdom. And
You ride his coattails like I ride Lee Cantor's coattails in the radio biz. I get the concept, man. Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
So what do you have a specialty, you guys?
We do two things. We have certainly a tax practice and a wealth management practice, but our primary focus and what we're trying to grow the business is to spread out the workflow over the year. You know, the CPA business has gotten to be a 3-month-a-year business, and so really I've been commissioned with spreading out the workflow with small businesses to do monthly accounting for them and to provide services that are other months of the year.
Oh, so it's like kind of advising and consulting.
Yes,
and
we do.
Maybe some planning throughout the year rather than just tax time.
Right. Mm-hmm. We try to help businesses become profitable, decide what they want to do with their business and where they want to take it, what their goals and objectives are.
I got to believe it's got to be tough getting new CPA business because I'm operating under the impression people that are relatively successful, they've got a business going or something, or they've got, you know, double income earning families and they want some professional help with their taxes and stuff. My instincts are they already have someone that they know and trust. How do you go about getting new business? That's got to be tough.
Well, let's go back to the part about someone that you know and you trust. Often, the CPA is the person that you do trust most and is the person that you're least likely to abandon because of the relationship you've established. But often we find that the accountant is not meeting a client's needs. You know, the client looks for something beyond just transactional information, you know, tax returns. And often we slip into this valley where all we are doing for a client is just that transactional tax return and meeting that specific need that the client defines. And sometimes the client just doesn't give us a chance to meet a broader need because they're so so invested in a day-to-day turmoil of their small business.
So what are some of the things that I should be leaning on my CPA to do, or at least asking my CPA to help with? Because I sense that there's a lot more that a CPA can and should be doing for me.
Well, we think planning is a big objective that people do not do well. Small businesses have a lot of obstacles to confront. You have to do many things well to have a successful business. You have to know your product and service. You have to finance your product and service. You have to motivate your people. You have a lot of things to do. And what we try to do is to identify those areas where the business owner is very good and areas where he's not quite as good. And we help him support himself and his business in those areas.
Now, how am I as the client even aware you provide this service? Because I would never think to ask my CPA help in that area.
I think a lot of it comes listening. We listen and we ask questions. You find out a lot about people as you talk to them and you talk about what their goals are, what their objectives are, what do they want to accomplish with their business and with their life. So we try to establish relationships. And to get back to your question a moment ago where how do we get new business? Because most people have a relationship. Well, it's meeting people. It's finding opportunities to talk to people about situations and about what they want to accomplish. Accountants get buttonholed into tax preparers and that sort of thing. And I think as we meet people and we go out and we ask questions and find out what's good for them, what works for them, what do we want to accomplish with their life? And we are their financial guidance, if you will, their guidance counselors.
Are you kind of like the quarterback on their team?
We try to be. We do try to be. We try to bring in professionals, align them with professionals who can support them in areas that they're not strong. And but mainly, it is. That's a good analogy, is to be the quarterback of a
financial. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me, because for me, I know, for instance, I know for a fact that Holly and I need wills.
Right.
Well, what am I going to do? Go to the Yellow Pages? Or I'm going to ask you, who does your will? But I think what would be nice is if I could go to my CPA and say, okay, you know, what do we need? Or maybe my CPA should already be coming to me and saying, you need a will. And I'd like to think they have someone that's already vetted and, you know, has my best interest at heart for wills. There's also, you know, I'm part of that sandwich generation. I may be 5 or 10 years from it, but I've got to start thinking about long-term care for my folks. And I'd like to think that I have this quarterback person to go to for that. Do you find yourself playing that role?
Well, we do. And as part of our tax planning, when people come in for a tax interview, we typically have a checklist that they go through. Do they have a will in place? What are their beneficiaries? Do they need a trust in place, you know, in the event that they have a child who may have special needs and that sort of thing? Do they have long-term care insurance? Do they have these particular items in place? And then typically during tax season, we don't have time to address those issues, but we certainly try to follow up after the fact. But that is our responsibility. We look out for their long-term financial well-being.
What are some of the things? You mentioned some of them on that checklist. So do you kind of create a, what do you call it, some sort of an assessment of my needs, and then we make sure that I'm hitting all of them?
Well, there are two different aspects to that. One is a small business person, and the other is an individual, because it's hard to divorce the two.
Right.
A small business person has his individual financial life is hard to divorce from his business life.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
what happens with a small business is, you know, you're completely invested in that if you're the small business owner, and the small business ends up being the engine that runs your life.
Right.
It's going to be providing for all of your financial needs if it's successful. And if it's not successful, it just soaks up all of your energy. And so, you know, that's the first concentration is going to be on trying to deal with the issues that face the small businessman in that place. And as you help the small business become successful, you're able then to address the personal needs of the business owner.
I wonder, do you find that there are some unique challenges associated with serving the family business client? I bet that could just be a ball of barbed wire.
There are certainly a lot of dynamics here. You've got interpersonal relationships. You've got succession planning.
Are you talking about your own business because your dad?
Well, that's part of it.
Sounds pretty personal.
We do have some experience in that regard.
Yeah. Sounds like he's got a little scar tissue there. Exactly.
No,
I think we struck a chord.
No. But, I mean, you know, our succession planning for Gerald Clayton to us today has been ongoing for many years.
Right. And, it's been well planned out.
Yeah. It's been well planned out. And, you know, the continuing involvement that Gerald has had at this stage, more observation than active, has just been a pleasure for everybody.
Yeah,
and that's
sure.
kind of, you know, it would be a great model for
others to follow,
business.
Right.
Yeah.
So what kind of mistakes do you find, though, that some family business owners, or anybody in general, but I'd be particularly interested in family business, what kind of mistakes do they make in terms of their estate planning, financial planning, that kind of thing?
Right, because there's a million plans. Like you mentioned, succession planning. There's how many different types of planning do that have to be done?
Well, let's talk about the succession planning. You know, what often happens is mom and dad have children, and the kids are thought of as being the natural successor for mom and dad. And, you know, we have seen some tragedies occur where a child was brought into the business and learned the business and took over the business from a parent, and then discovered that they really were not capable of running the business. They would take off on a tangent, and the next thing you know, the business is gone. So, you know, having that desire is not enough. You've got to have the plan, and you've got to make sure that the son or daughter is equipped.
Because that's really an issue that can really blow up on the company. If you bring a child in above other people who have been with the company for years.
I bet that gets ugly in a hurry.
It can be, and it can really have an impact. It can really demotivate the other employees and cause, you know, severe problems with the company. And that's hard to identify because mm-hmm. you've got to tell perhaps a business owner that his son may not be or daughter may not be ready.
Right.
And that's a difficult situation.
That's a fun conversation.
Tread lightly right. on such
and
things.
And that's just one kind of planning. There's other, like what about like with a tornado or something that's a natural disaster? That's another kind of planning that business people were like, you know, your computer
you know,
blows up or something.
Yeah, well, we try to help a client realize that that the whole process that that we want to engage them with is to confronting the risks and the uncertainties that will affect their business. And again, the small business owner is usually overwhelmed. It doesn't have time to do that, but you know, it's critical to success of the business that they do so. And the disaster planning is a good beginning point because there are things that you can plan for. There are uncertainties that you can expect with some likelihood or not. Whether they occur or not, you still need to have a plan in place. Because you may not know what disaster is going to occur, but something's going to occur.
Right.
And at least you can have a list of people to call and people who can step in and provide when you need that help.
We look at that really as under the umbrella of risk management.
Uh-huh.
Certainly insurance has a place there,
mm-hmm.
Various types of insurance that can step in the event that there is a catastrophe to provide mm-hmm. financing, to provide replacement parts, these type of things.
But here again, I don't want to necessarily go on the advice of this insurance guy. He's going to make a commission on selling me insurance. I want to check in with you, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. We do think we're independent.
And you have my best interest at heart, right? And you see the big picture of my...
That's our goal. That's what we're commissioned to do. And that's what we think so. We think that we are independent in looking at all aspects of the business, and we try to help them mitigate the risk so that... catastrophic events do not cripple the business to the extent that it can't continue.
Lee, one segment can't hold these guys. We got to have them back on the show. But there's a couple of questions I know I want to ask, and it looks like you have another one you want to ask. My question at the moment, though, is let's say I'm in the market for a CPA. I don't know how to hire a CPA. I don't even know what questions to ask. What should I be looking for? What kind of questions should I be asking? And what kind of responses should I be hoping that I get as I'm shopping
for a CPA?
Well,
I think for sure we've already established that these kind of pre-planning or planning meetings throughout the year is valuable. And you guys do that annually or quarterly, or what are you shooting for?
Well, we certainly do it annually.
Uh-huh.
The good thing about a tax preparation service is the fact that we do get to see our clients every year.
Right.
And we get to review where they are with various...
But you want to do this meeting as separate because that's kind of, to me, that's like when you're doing tax planning, that's like its own little tornado by
mm-hmm.
itself.
It is.
And you don't want to be even bogged down yourself, I'm sure, with getting into this planning. It would seem like it during a deader point of the year when there's more time for you to spend that time with me.
Again, you've got to go back to a comment made earlier, which was that the small business owner doesn't have any time and doesn't have anyone to talk to. The most valuable thing that we can offer the client is to sit down with them and have that conversation, listen to them, and then help them cast a broader vision for themselves personally and for their business. That's something that's really missing in many
right.
businesses.
But to answer your question about the selecting a CPA, I think it's important that you have someone you can relate to, someone who understands what you're trying to do. Certainly demonstrates a technical competence, but referrals from other people who are satisfied is a big way to select them because it is a difficult choice to make, and it's a big choice.
So I'm quite serious. I think we need to have these guys back on because I still have a ton of questions. I think it would be fun to get you guys back on, maybe with a delighted client.
Okay.
Or one or two of your best referral partners like you're talking about. And I don't know, Lee, maybe set up
like
a dedicated round table thing.
Right.
Would you guys be up for that at some point?
Absolutely.
That could be fun stuff. But before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys so they can have a substantive conversation about some of these issues.
Great. Clayton Paulk & Associates is the name of the firm. We are in the North Lake area, in the Atlanta area, off La Vista and 285. Our website is claytonpaulk.com. And our email addresses are brucepaulk@claytonpaulk.com. And mine's a little shorter. It's gclayton@claytonpaulk.com. That's PAULK.com.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you both on the show. Listen, can you hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
Terrific. So what'd you learn out of that interview, Lee? Did you get any insight there?
Yeah, I think that your CPA is more than just the guy who does your taxes nowadays.
Well, I think it could be. That's really not the way I've been managing it so far. I mean, and if I think about it, my CPA's probably been trying to steer me in that direction, but And that just makes perfect sense. There's a peace of mind, I think, that you right. associate with having that quarterback.
Yeah, I think that I think that nowadays in the service economy that all of your service providers have to do a little more than just the service that they do.
Well, yeah, and I think they have to be the guy that knows the guy, right? You know, like you right. want that guy. Like, yeah, I got a guy.
Exactly.
And you want it, and you want it to be pure and high integrity referral, and get that referral from someone who genuinely has your best interest at heart, not just trying to get a kickback or something.
Exactly.
So, who do we have next, man?
We got an old friend, Mr. Matthew Dickinson. How you doing, Matt?
Good morning. Doing great. Thanks.
And you brought with you somebody that's close to your heart. Who is that?
That's Brian Phillips with Wells Fargo Mortgage.
Oh.
Oh, Brian Stevens, excuse me. Not that close to my heart, apparently.
Who's Brian Phillips, Matt?
Yeah, come on.
Good start, Matt.
Wells Fargo. I've heard of Wells Fargo. I think a little company a sign around town, Wells Fargo. No, actually, they're my bank.
Oh, are
we
they?
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, they're not going to loan me any money. We all know that. But
well, maybe
now
they will.
They let me have a checking account. You know? And maybe they'll buy the sponsorship for the back of the Radio X mug
yeah,
or something.
We'll
but
work on that.
We all know they're not going to loan Stone any money until he gets a better CPA.
Exactly.
So, you know, this could all work. We should all get together the show and fix Stone's money situation.
All right. Well, Brian, why don't you talk a little bit about Wells Fargo? They're kind of new to the market, right?
Yeah, we actually took over Wachovia about a year and a half ago here in the Atlanta market. And, you know, we're working on acquiring all the Wachovia branches all across the country.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. You know, we're now going to be the largest bank branch-wise in the United States. And, you know, it's about a 3 or 4 year undertaking to kind of merge Wells Fargo with the Wachovia folks.
Right.
But it's going well.
And were you with Wachovia or they brought you in?
I'm a legacy Wells Fargo guy.
Oh.
I've got about 14 years total with the company.
So they shipped you in from California or something?
No, I've been in Atlanta for 11 years.
Interesting title, though, for a banking guy. Renovation, he's sales manager and renovation specialist. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen a niche in the marketplace with a lot of the distressed properties that are in the Atlanta metro area. You know, 44% of all properties selling in the country right now are distressed. And distressed is either short sale or foreclosure. And we've seen, you know, a demand for people looking to buy these properties that might not want to buy them because of the condition that they're in. And so renovation lending allows that buyer to buy that property in its current condition. And I use the term ugly house loosely, but, you know, not every house is the perfect house for the perfect candidate. And so these people can go in and buy the home in their current condition and then add money to do whatever they want to do to the property, whether it's update the kitchen, whether it's fix the pool in the backyard, add a second story. You could literally tear a house down to the ground and build a new one on top of it.
And there's money for that now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? With all you hear about are how everybody's mortgage is underwater.
Yeah, well, that you know, a renovation loan, when you buy a property with it, is based on the after improved value.
Uh-huh.
So as an example, let's say you wanted to go buy a home for $100,000 and you wanted to put a $50,000 second story on it.
Right.
The appraiser is going to take into account what you're going to do to the home.
Uh-huh.
And our loan's based on that after improved value.
Wow. So and those loans are available?
Absolutely. The two most popular types is the FHA 203K, which is an FHA mortgage. It's been around since 1961. 23,000 people last year used that mortgage product to buy a home.
Wow.
Then there's a Fannie Mae product as well.
Do you know about that, Matt?
I sure did. In fact, the reason that small closing attorneys like me can survive during
don't sell yourself
economy,
short, Matt.
Well, it's
and you're
it's
not
the truth.
So small either. I know you're trying to dupe the radio listening audience.
We are
but
on
the
radio.
Guy's not so small. Just letting y'all know.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. We still talk about survival instead of thriving. I think that's still the operative word. But the reason that we've been able to survive is that we have been participating in the closings for these distressed properties that this Mr. Stevens guy is apparently talking about. I thought I was here with Brian Phillips. I'm not really sure. He's an
imposter. I'm a fill-in guest. That's okay.
Yeah. But that being said, a lot of people are steering away from buying foreclosures or short sales if they are going to enter the market because they think exactly what he said, that the property is going to be a mess. But those people that have a little bit broader view realize that the opportunity is there to buy one of these houses that maybe is what we would call a fixer-upper. Unfortunately, some of these foreclosures are stripped, you know, to the bone. Not so bad with short sales. However, somebody that wants to, you know, add on a deck or do something like that, there are products available. I think that's a credit to Wells Fargo kind of seeing that there's going to be a niche and jumping on it. So that's what's impressive.
What's a short sale?
A short sale is basically when the bank that holds the mortgage on the property.
So this is a house that the person who owned the house can't afford anymore, the bank takes it over. Now the bank is the owner.
Well, that's essentially a foreclosure, but a short sale is when the bank that has the mortgage on the property understands that the borrower is essentially underwater.
So they borrower may still live there?
They may still live there, but what they're doing is they're getting the bank, the mortgage holder, to accept less than what is owed on the loan. And like I said, that's a little bit better than a foreclosure for a borrower. But it's still a pretty emotional transaction, to say the least.
Right.
So is it worth it, in your guys' opinion, for a young couple, first home, should they jump through these hoops and be looking for these distressed properties? Is that
Absolutely.
A worthwhile pursuit?
Absolutely.
And in doing so, they should come to one or both of you guys, and you'll guide them through that process?
Mm-hmm. See, I always say go to your mortgage company first. Find out what you can get approved for. See what ballpark you're hunting in.
Even well, you say go to Brian Phillips, and then they call the wrong guy.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's be honest.
Was he in the Beach Boys or something? I don't know. Is it? Yeah, right.
Plays for the Falcons, I think.
Well, no, but you would steer me, if I were a young couple, you would steer me to Brian, and I would start the conversation there, yeah?
The first person I would send you to would be to Brian. Like I said, find out what you can get approved for. Get a
before you go to a real estate person?
I think we all know that. Numbers. So let's use another example.
Yeah, I always say that even before you find a realtor, let that realtor know what ballpark you're playing in. It's good to see a mortgage professional first.
And the reason for that really is number one, a lot of these distressed properties don't meet what's called minimum property standards for a mortgage. So what that means is for HUD to insure an FHA mortgage, or for Fannie Mae to securitize that mortgage, that property's got to be in pretty much tip-top condition. Well, if a buyer goes out and they secure financing and they don't get renovation financing lined up and they end up wanting to buy a property that needs it, they now have to start the process over with another lender. So, a prudent lender will explain to them all the financing options, but renovation financing is really kind of the next step.
And it's a specialty. I mean, there are specific things that you know where the bodies are buried, where the landmines are, that could save a ton of time, I would think.
Absolutely.
And I've had my nephew bought maybe it was distressed, but it was in foreclosure or whatever. And it was a real headache for him, but he was willing to wait. His perspective, and it was not Wells Fargo, was that bank was kind of dragging their feet through the process, which made no sense to me. I would have thought the bank would want to get out of it as soon as possible. But maybe if he had somebody like you to guide him through the process, it would have been less painful and he'd have got in quicker.
Yeah, you've got two people at work here. You've got the lender, then you've got the bank holding the property if it's a foreclosure, or working with the homeowner on a short sale. So really it's up to the lender to explain to the owner or the seller, we've got a specialized product that will solve the problem of, hey, we can put a buyer in your property today. Work with us and Matt in getting the short sale closed or getting the foreclosure on the right track.
Now, we've been talking a lot about people, maybe buying their first home or just buying a home for themselves. Is there opportunities for investors in this?
Absolutely. The Fannie Mae product is called Fannie Mae Home Style, and there are very few lenders. In fact, I challenge you guys, call up 20 mortgage brokers in Atlanta. They're going to laugh and say, I've never heard of that product before. Mm-hmm. But it's a Fannie Mae product that allows an owner-occupant or investor, even a vacation home buyer, to go and buy a property and add all the costs of renovation into their 30-year fixed rate or 15-year fixed rate mortgage. Uh-huh.
Wow. So
you have to absolutely love it, Brian, that you've got Matt and people like Matt out there in the marketplace, running into people, talking to people every day that are sending business to you. Mm-hmm. What a luxury that must be. Or is that just the way it works in your business and that's how you market your business?
Well, similar to the gentleman in the CPA firms, we rely on strong referral partners to help build our business. It's almost impossible for us to get this message out on our own to the marketplace.
So once again, I think it goes back to providing a service that is needed in that specific niche. And Wells Fargo has consistently provided those products. And, yes, there are other companies out there that do renovation lending, but I would submit that probably nobody does it better than this gentleman over here, just because this is his focus. Mm-hmm. This is all that you're doing right now.
Correct. This is the only type of product that I originate.
Is that unusual for banks to have a renovation specialist, or is that a Wells Fargo thing?
It's kind of a Wells Fargo thing. There were, 23,000 FHA 203K loans closed last year. Right. We closed almost 9,000 of those. We've got about a 25% market share in renovation lending nationwide,
and that's probably the largest.
Oh, without a doubt. Yep.
So purely hypothetically, let's say that we knew a guy that had a home in East Cobb and the deck was basically condemned, scared to death to have a Christmas party out there. In fact, not even going to have Christmas at his house this year until he can get the deck repaired. Is that in your wheelhouse too, or someone else in your system would help that hypothetical person secure the funds to get a nice new deck put up?
Well, a renovation loan is simply just a mortgage on a property. So if you're looking to do something as simple as a deck, you might want to go get an equity line of credit or secure a personal loan for that. But if you're looking to do something more along the lines of structural changes to the property, redesigning the kitchen, adding a, you know, a second story, putting in the man cave in the basement,
then refinancing, it's more major stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And the first-time home buyer, I've seen people come in and do as little as $1,500 worth of work. They might just want an appliance package and granite countertops in the kitchen. So it's very, very versatile.
But it's tacked onto your mortgage. It's not a standalone loan
that
for
is
a renovation.
Correct. Right. Think of it as your standard mortgage like you might have on your house, but we've added money to that loan to rehab the property after you buy it.
And I think it's interesting that you don't have to necessarily be a first-time home buyer, but one of the reasons that it's so great for a first-time home buyer is that many, and I guess we're stereotyping, younger couples don't have a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to afford to, you know, upgrade a kitchen or something, it seems to make a lot of sense for a first-time home buyer,
at least younger buyers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, 41% of all first-time home buyers were single females. Now, I'm not single, and I'm not saying I married one, but that being said, you know, a lot of them don't have the necessary funds to go and put that brand-new kitchen in that property, but all they can qualify for is a home with a 1972 kitchen.
And it's a good career choice, though, for the single male.
I guess it sounds to me like Rider coattails, right?
So I'm fascinated with this whole referral partner dynamic, because anything that I may have done in that regard has been purely by accident. I don't think, and I'm sure it's been unintentional. So do you guys call each other every Thursday? Do you go have lunch?
Obviously not. They don't even know their names.
I know Matt's name.
So, how does that work? How do you stay connected?
Well, we are actually new friends. I kind of stumbled upon him basically talking exactly about the topic that we're talking about today, because we're seeing a lot of people that do not pull the trigger on a short sale or a foreclosure because they are unaware of something like this product. These houses, a lot of them need a little TLC, especially the, you know, the foreclosures, as I said before. But as we were talking about, I said, where have you been all my last 9 months?
I know, we've done
a lot of those types of closings.
Right. And I get that a lot in the real estate community. In fact, I put together a 3-hour CE course, continuing education course, last year, and I've donated over 1,000 hours of continuing education of this product to the real estate community because they need it.
Right.
44% of the properties out there are distressed, but these realtors have no idea how to put people in them.
Right. That must be frustrating for you to have this great product and they're not even aware of it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why you're doing stuff like this.
I guess.
You know? No, I'm tooting my own horn.
Yes, Matt.
We just added our fourth office up in Alpharetta. And the reason that we were able to open up another office is that we help the listing agents facilitate the document flow from the short sale seller to the mortgage holder. Now, traditionally, this is something that was done by real estate agents, and it's very, very document intensive. And frankly, you know, we want our agents out there buying and, you know, finding buyers and finding new listings. As the law firm, we take out that step for the agents, where they don't have to essentially, you know, make sure that their sellers are getting their documents together to submit to the bank for the short sale. And because we've been so active in that, getting lots of transactions that way, that's why when I met with Brian over here, it was just a home run. I said, this is a great potential relationship.
Well, you've got to be a godsend to the agents, because it's my understanding their worst nightmare is showing up to the closing table and a lot of these I's haven't been dotted, T's haven't
surprises.
Been crossed, right?
They don't like surprises.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the mid-sized to larger firms provide this service. Many of them are still getting, the system in process. We've been doing it since 2008. So we kind of have a leg up, just because we have a little bit more experience than they do. But yeah, I mean, you're nowhere near the closing table if you don't have the, you know, short sale approval. And that's the goal. That's when we start. Hey, are you underwater? Is there a financial hardship? If there's yes to a couple of things, we think that it's worthwhile to get those listing agents to list that home and try to get the bank to approve the short sale.
Well, I got
to
tell you, I'm inspired by a lot of things from this conversation, but one is the focus, the concentration, that you guys have adopted sort of this specialty mentality. You're going to be really, really good at this one thing. And I think there's tremendous value in that to the marketplace. I applaud you for doing that. I suspect that took some bravery on your part, because I know when you're first out there, you know, you've been to law school, you got the big loan, you hang your shingle out. You know, you want to take checks from anybody, right?
Well, you're right. My old line is I would paint your house back in 2008 if you'd pay me. It didn't matter if it was legal work or not. But, no, we found a niche because we had to. And like our, you know, CPAs that were on before, we rely heavily on those types of partners. I'm an expert in what I do. But I don't have time to do the small business thing. Like, you know, I have QuickBooks. That's great. But you got to find those partners that are good at what they do and then leverage those relationships.
And I'm all in on the renovation lending, guys. I mean, I've got two kids in diapers. I've got a wife that, and I don't want to say it doesn't work because she works very hard inside
the
home.
Very careful about what
that's
we say
right.
on the
no
air.
Income. No income.
That's correct. And, you know, my two-year-old boy drinks that organic chocolate milk like it's going out of style. So with that being said, it's kind of scary carving out that niche. But, you know, I don't want to say I'm a visionary, but I think that that's the direction of the market for the next 5 to 10 years.
Right. Wow, that sounds great. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My website is www.renovationloanguy.com. I'm based here in Atlanta. Phone number 770-833-2472.
And Matt?
Yeah, DickisonLaw.com, and that's DickisonLaw.com, four offices in the metro area, Tucker, Midtown, Carrollton, and now Alpharetta. But find us online. You can send us a message. All of our numbers are there. And I tell you, I talk more about this topic than I do any other as far as short sales and foreclosures. So please call.
And then if somebody had a question, you talk to them. There's not a fee to ask you.
$1 million
up front.
No, absolutely. Hey, that's what's the best thing about being a transactions attorney. I get paid at the closing. I don't like this billable by the, you know, billable hour stuff. So no, free calls right. All the time.
And you'll paint their house too, right?
And if I need to, I'll paint their house.
All right, great. Well, that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next time. We'll